This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
I love you, Pumpkin.
I love you, honey bunny.
Everybody be cool, this is a robbery!
That's my guest Tim Roth, holding up a coffee shop in Pulp Fiction. It was his second film with Quentin Tarantino. In Reservoir Dogs, Roth was the cop who goes undercover on a bungled heist and gets shot. Roth doesn't just specialize in contemporary mayhem. He played Vincent van Gogh in Robert Altman's Vincent and Theo, and he co-starred with Gary Oldman in Tom Stoppard's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Now you can see him in a powdered wig showing off his swordsmanship in the historical romantic adventure Rob Roy. Liam Neeson stars as Robert Roy MacGregor, the 18th century folk hero of the Scottish Highlands. MacGregor is poor but strong and courageous, ready to defend the honor of his clan and his family. And after he borrows money from the Marquis of Montrose, he has to defend his clan against the Marquis's henchman, played by Tim Roth. Roth's character is a fop and sociopathic killer. I asked Roth how he got the part.
Well, I knew that at some point I was going to have to do a studio film because you have to pay the rent. And it was a matter of reading what was out there, which was not too hot, really. It's very different from the independent film. So I'd read a few, and then Michael, Caton Jones, the director, who's an old drinking friend, really, said, phoned me up and said, look, I've got the green light on the film, and but it's happening really quickly. I'm going to send you the script. Tell me what you think. And so I read it, and it made me giggle, made me laugh.
But it's funny, you know, Liam Neeson represents swarthy, righteous manhood. And, of course, you're crazy and you're a fop. So did you feel you were really playing off this, like, swarthy manhood of Liam Neeson?
Yeah, I mean, it's the tough job. Liam has the tough job. He's got the film kind of hangs off him. He's got the nobility to deal with. He's got all that stuff to deal with. And we can come in, you know, me and John Hurt and Brian Cox, and can camp it up a storm. You know, the bank isn't on us. And that, I think, is the tough job in the studio films, is that there's always somebody else to carry it. You know, he and Jessica, I suppose, have to.
So did you have to learn sword play?
Yeah, but you do that in a... We had about 3 months, and I would, whenever I wasn't filming, I would be doing classes, and you just learn it like you would a dance. You learn it step by step.
There's a rape scene in the film in which your character is particularly despicable. Do you want to talk at all about playing that scene?
Yeah, it was so you get up in the morning and say, what have I got to do today? Well, I'm going to go and rape Jessica Lange all day today. So you go in, you know, and it's not a love scene, so it doesn't require any of those kinds of passions, and it was logistics, unfortunately. It's not that exciting to talk about, apart from the fact that there's someone under the table holding it because it's moving across the floor, and there's a... I should explain it's done over a table from the rear. But it's... So there's a guy trying to brace the table. There's a whole crew in there. There's a guy in the corner having a cheese sandwich. You know, it's very... We laughed pretty much in between every take. We giggled because it was just such a ridiculous situation. You know, but I think that the point was to get it to be as vile as rape is, you know. I think we succeeded to a certain extent.
Tim Roth is my guest, and he co-stars in the new film Rob Roy. You were in Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. How did you first meet Quentin Tarantino?
Well, it's the same thing. You know, your agent sends you a script, you read it, and we with that one, I was reaching for the phone, you know, after the second page, because I thought it was hilarious and, you know, beautiful dialogue. I love the dialogue with Reservoir Dogs. So I went and met him, and then, you know, it was an audition process and trying to get the job.
Harvey Keitel was probably already a part of the project when you signed on, because I think he was even one of the producers or backers or something, but I know he was in on it from early on. Did you want to work with him? Were you already an admirer of his?
I've always been a fan. I think he's one of the great actors, American actors, and I'd grown up on films like Fingers and Taxi Driver and Mean Streets and, you know, these films, and The Duelists. So, I was a big, big fan. I was very nervous to meet him.
What was your first meeting with him like?
Well, he was trying to get me to read, and I was refusing to read.
Why didn't you want to read for the part?
I get really embarrassed by reading. I'm very bad at it.
You get embarrassed by it?
Yeah, I get really... I'm very, very bad at the auditioning process, and... The way I look at it is that that I will lose as many jobs by reading as I will by reading as by not reading. So it's a 50-50 thing, and I decided not to do it. But eventually Quentin, you know, we went out and got drunk and Quentin got me to read every character in the script, but that was at a later date. But first meeting with Harvey was that he was saying, look, I really want you to read and just to get an idea. It doesn't have to be a great audition, blah, blah, blah. But I refused to do it at that point. So that was my first meeting with him. So not only was I in awe of him, but I was doing something, I was turning down one of his requests.
So you read every character in the script. How did you end up being Mr. Orange?
That was the one that I wanted to do. Quentin had thought of me for Pink or Blonde, and at that stage, in the early stages, but I liked the idea of lying. Not only was I an Englishman playing an American, but in the film I was somebody pretending to be something else. And
right, because in the film you're an undercover cop who's pretending to actually be a criminal, you know, who's in on the heist. And even, like, as you die through the movie, you have to remain in character as a gangster and not a cop. And there's this great scene early on, right after your shot. Harvey Keitel is driving you to the hideout. And you're kind of bleeding to death in the back seat. Mm-hmm. And you're whimpering, going, I'm dying, I'm dying. And Keitel is trying to reassure you and trying to get you to get a hold of yourself.
I'm going to die, I know it.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't realize you had a degree in medicine. Are you a doctor? Answer me, please, are you a doctor? Huh?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So you admit you don't know what you're talking about. So, if you're through giving me your amateur opinion, slide back and listen to the news. I'm taking you back to the rendezvous. Joe's gonna get you a doctor. The doctor's gonna fix you up. And you're gonna be okay. Now say it. You're gonna be okay. Say it! You're gonna be okay. Say the damn words. You're gonna be okay.
Oh God!
Say the damn words. Say it.
I'm okay, Larry.
Your voice is great in this scene. It's this falsetto.
Yeah.
Tell me about hitting the right voice for this.
Well, with that sequence, Harvey really likes to rehearse everything, and so does Quentin, for that matter. I really don't like rehearsal for film. So that was the only scene that I insisted that we didn't rehearse because I actually didn't know what I was going to do. And so what you see there is what we did when the camera first started rolling, and it was just what came out of my mouth. I had no idea what to do. And that was spontaneous.
Was Reservoir Dogs the first film that you played with an American accent?
No, I'd done a film called Jumpin' at the Boneyard up in New York, which came and went, unfortunately. It's a good film. About two kids in the Bronx up there.
Do you have any reservations about doing an American accent? Were you confident that you could do it?
Well, it's just a lot of homework to try and do it accurately and not slip across the water. You know, it's a lot of homework to do. On top of trying to build a character, you have to hide behind a voice in a way, and it can get in the way. Initially, it always does. In the first 2 weeks of filming, it can be you're more self-conscious than you should be. And then you start to forget about it, you know. But it's a long process. I work with a dialect coach. The woman, actually, that I killed in Reservoir Dogs is my dialect coach.
Oh, that's funny.
I wanted to kill her, so I got her the job.
Well, where did she start with you?
We start 3 weeks beforehand with a... she breaks the script down into syllables, into just sounds, and then we work... over and over and over again, just on those lists, and then you start working from the script, doing the scenes, and then she's on set every day when I'm filming, every night or day, whatever. And then we also work in the looping, so revoicing the film afterwards, so if there's any mistakes, you can cover your tracks there.
Now, in Pulp Fiction, you were cast as the small-time crook, the wannabe, who holds up the diner, only to find out in the last scene that some of the customers are professional hitmen, as played by John Travolta and Samuel Jackson. Now, did you choose that role, or were you just... Is that the role that you were offered?
No, Quentin wrote it for me. He wrote it for me and Amanda to play. And I'd introduced him to Amanda at a premiere of one of her films, Fisher King, And I said, I want to work with her. I just finished a student film with her. And I said, I want to work with her in one of your films, but she has to have a big gun. He said, okay. And he went off and wrote it. And that's what he came up with.
So you've had to learn how to use a gun well and badly for films that you've been in. How do you learn how to use it for a film?
Well, I tend to not like penis extension gun movies. So I like to look for a way to use it which is not overtly macho.
Mm-hmm.
Unless that's the character, which can be also fun to play with. But I don't know, you see too many guns in movies nowadays, especially after Quentin. I mean, the scripts that I'm getting now are very sort of, you know, five guys sitting in a cafe where they're wearing black suits and they're discussing Reservoir Dogs. And, you know, it can get a little tedious after a while. I think they should bring back sword movies, drive-by swordings.
Well, they just did, I understand.
I know,
you're in it, right.
But drive-by sword play, you can't do it. They should bring back swords. Ban guns, bring back swords.
My guest is Tim Roth. He co-stars in the new film, Rob Roy. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actor Tim Roth. How did you start acting?
I auditioned for a school play as a joke, and it backfired, and I got the part, so I had to do it. And once I'd stepped out on stage, I just thought, this is the greatest thing to do. This is such fun.
So what was the part you got?
I got to play Dracula in a musical of Dracula. So it's something me and Gary Oldman have in common.
Yes, that's right. Of course, in Coppola's Dracula. Yeah. So you had to sing too, huh?
I had to sing, dance, you know.
Singing and dancing storm. Dracula? What kind of Dracula songs did you have?
I can't remember. It was so silly. It's one of those school plays that you do, which has a large cast, so a lot of kids can get involved in it. And it was fun. It was really good fun.
So you liked it? You liked being on stage?
Yeah, it terrified me at the beginning. I really liked it. I loved it. It's purely selfish. It's not for any of sort of, isn't it wonderful to entertain people reasons. It is good for me. I like doing it. It makes me feel good, you know.
Did you start pursuing acting after that?
Yeah, immediately. I went to art school in the meantime because I already had a place in art school and I studied sculpture, but I quit that pretty quickly. I was always off anyway doing a play here or there. So I immediately started to pursue. I didn't want to stop from then on, and it's been the same ever since. Really.
Did you ever do the Royal Shakespeare Company thing?
No, they never invited me.
Uh-huh.
I was always doing sort of gritty, realistic drama, I suppose, over there on TV or whatever, and they never saw me as Iago or whatever it may be. Unfortunately, that's the part I would love to play, Iago, Richard III or Iago, I think.
So have you ever done Shakespeare?
I did once on the Fringe in London. I played Cassio.
Have you done less Shakespeare than any successful British actor in history?
Probably, yeah. I got to do a little bit when we did Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead. There was some Shakespeare in that, and it took me 25 takes to get it right. It was a nerve-wracking experience.
So what movies did you love when you were growing up?
I think I was really influenced by early American movies. Not early American, 70s American movies. And also Kubrick and Truffaut, I suppose.
When you say 70s movies, with Scorsese?
Scorsese's early stuff. And,
Coppola.
And French Connection, films like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, those kinds of things. Where they were. I mean, Scarecrow is a great movie. I always loved Scarecrow with Hackman and Pacino. And Dog Day Afternoon, things like that. Wonderful.
So when you were in England admiring all these American films starring great American character actors, did you see yourself ever taking the kind of role that American character actors got?
No, I never did. It just seemed so far away to come to America. I'd never been out of the country, you know. To come to America and be in movies was just, you know, a pipe dream. It just seemed the impossible thing to do. And then as I started to work in England more and get some notoriety, I suppose, Gary Oldman took off. He went off and did a film called State of Grace up in New York and played an American and did it very successfully. And I thought, well, it is quite possible, really. I mean, if you can take the plunge, if you get invited out there to do a film, that's when it's possible, you know. And I always thought, don't ever go until you're invited, otherwise you'll just end up being a bartender You know.
So did you wait until you were invited?
Yeah, I got lucky. I got lucky. I got to go to New York and make that film.
State of Grace?
Mm-mm.
Which film?
Jumping at the Boneyard.
At the Boneyard. Oh.
It came and went so quickly, it created a vacuum. but it was a great, you know, sort of realism piece, and I got to play somebody from the Bronx. I got to sort of test the waters. And then I thought, well, I'll go to LA and do a bunch of meetings before I go back to London. And I stayed. I thought, well, I go back to London, go back to unemployment. What's the point? So I stayed and got Reservoir Dogs.
Oh.
So it was a weird circle.
Uh-huh. So you really weren't too well established at the time of Reservoir Dogs?
Only at home, not here. I mean, hardly anyone saw Vincent and Theo. You know, nobody saw Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. There'd been a bunch of television films that I'd done at home. I'd worked with Mike Lee, I'd worked with Stephen Frears, I'd worked with quite a few people, but nothing that had been really seen out here. So apart from by filmmakers had seen my stuff. So that was where I had at least a foot in the door somehow.
Did you study acting?
I never did, no. I just went for it. As soon as I knew that I wanted to do it, I didn't want to stop doing it. I wanted to be, you know, go out on stage and do it immediately, as opposed to go to school and study it and then go out on stage. You know, I think if I'd have gone to school, I wouldn't have been an actor, actually.
Why?
I was the same when I was at school, like, you know, in normal school. As soon as I was told to do something, I didn't want to do it. As soon as I had to do homework, I didn't want to do it. It's only now that I can do homework because I choose to. And I think if I'd have gone to drama school and they said, okay, tomorrow we're going to be start working on Shakespeare, I would have been bored.
So you...
It's a question of, I guess, rebelling against it, even if it's in your best interest. You know?
So when you were in school, did you have trouble in school?
I was the bullied. I was the one that was pursued. And basically I hid for about 5 years until it was all over, until all the bullies left. You know, they're probably all in prison now. I hope.
What were the good places to hide?
Well, you just leave. I wouldn't be there. You know, and luckily enough, the punk thing was happening at when I was about 14 or 15. So we'd head into the West End of London and go to alternative record stores and sort of jump up and down and look silly.
You must get, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of ironic, I suppose, that you should learn sword fighting and gunplay for movie roles when you had to hide to protect yourself when you were in school.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain amount of revenge in that, you know. I think you find that with quite a lot of actors, that they were the persecuted at school, so they get to persecute in films, you know.
So how do you think of yourself as dividing your time between more commercial films and more eccentric independent films?
Well, I used to be an independent film snob, you know, up until quite recently, up until I got paid. And what happens is that, first of all, you can pay the rent. You're not worrying about that, which is a major preoccupation. And then if you do something in the studios, it doesn't really matter if it fails or not. If you're in a studio film, it's easier to persuade the financiers, the people that, you know, are loath to part with their money for an independent film. It's easier to persuade them to do that. You know, they say, well, he was in a studio film, you know, maybe it'll create, you know, some interest is created out there for him, and we'll give you a few grand, you know. Plus, you know, if you can find a good studio film to do, there's nothing wrong with it. But I used to be such a snob, and I think that there's a danger in that.
Being
elitist, you know, I only work in the independent field, you know, everything else is rubbish. Well, you know, look at what Harvey's done. Harvey has managed to walk that fine line between doing very commercial projects and being able to afford to have a family or whatever, and do things that he is, completely passionate about, that without his name or, you know, would never get made. You know, he can do Sister Act and then he can do Bad Lieutenant.
Did you feel like you learned anything that you could use yourself by watching Harvey Keitel perform?
He gets very deeply involved in his characters. He takes everything very personally. I really do think that he takes it home with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I learned that is not a way that I want to go. I love what he does, but I don't think I could live like that. I really don't. I mean, you do take some of it home with you, I suppose. You just, it's by nature, that's what you do. It's the nature of the job. But But I couldn't do it all that way. I couldn't. I'd go mad. I'd drive everybody mad around me, too.
So say on Reservoir Dogs, when he was one of the gangsters, what would he take home with him?
Well, I think, the very, very end of the film, when we shot that last scene...
You're both dying, you're both bleeding to death and dying.
He got very, very in there. I don't know what he was using to get... what means he was using to get in there, but it was actually quite scary that, you know, how complete he was as the character.
Well, how could you tell that he had done something extreme inside himself?
Well, he'd be weeping for 4 hours after this. We finished the scene, you know. I think that's taking it... Well, that's the thing about the method, is that everybody has their own and that's his. You know, that's how he gets there. I hope that I'll never have to go to that extent to get there. I don't think my personality could deal with it. I don't think my life could deal with it.
No, so like, if he'd be weeping after the scene, would you stay away from him, give him
privacy?
No,
I'd be with him. I'd be with him and we'd talk and stuff. And, you know, it's the way it is. You do what you do. You know, you do what you need to do to get in there. And it's pretty amazing.
Did you ever go through doubts thinking, oh, I'm not getting deep enough into the character because I'm not taking it home with me. I must be doing something wrong.
No, I never worry about that. What I worry on every film that I can't act. I always have that, you know, you turn up on the first day, I don't know what to do. I have no idea how to act. I'm going to be revealed. You know, you forget. It's almost in between films, you forget how to act. You have nightmares about it. But then you get there and you know what to do. It sort of instinct kicks in and you know how to approach it or whatever.
What's one of your nightmares that's really stuck with you?
The nightmare is you walk out on stage and you're in the wrong play.
When you don't know the lines?
You don't know the lines, but you're in the wrong play. You know the lines to the other play, but that's not the theatre it's happening in.
So what play have you wandered into by mistake in your dream?
I think I walked into Hamlet. That's the actor's nightmare. That's my actor's nightmare.
Tim Roth, he stars in the new movie Rob Roy. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.